It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility. You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
And welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I'm Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt is down in the Lone Star State, the Come and Take It State, or Liberty or Death, or something. What's the state motto of Texas? You don't know, do you?
Don't mess with Texas.
No.
The Lone Star State.
Yeah. I don't know. It is the Lone Star. I guess that's it, right? The Lone Star State. Where yep. Isn't it Liberty or Death or something? No?
Yeah, I think it is very similar to me.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But we'll have to look that up. You'll have to talk for an extended period of time so I can look that up here in the next little bit. But yeah, it's he's in Texas. I'm in New Hampshire. We're the Live Free or Die State. And this is The Life with Matt Bonner, which is powered by Revision Energy. What can sunshine do for you? Check out revisionenergy.com. Schedule free consultation. Mookie Betts is coming up on the show in the middle portion of the program. We'll hear from him. Also, Carson Smith, Red Sox reliever who's made it back after Tommy John surgery, and Kevin Kiermaier about the plethora of outstanding center fielders in the AL East. But we will begin with the New England Patriots, and we'll break some news here for folks. The Patriots are not going to go 19-0 this season. It's not going to happen. Just not going to happen this year. And we have seen, as is the case very often in New England, a complete swing in the emotions of folks. Some people think Brady is finished. Some people think that he has relinquished his spot as the GOAT. He went from the GOAT to the GOAT in a short period of time. Can't throw down the field. No mobility. Aaron Rodgers is better. It's lovely. It's lovely, the world of sports. But, you know, I think the big lesson here, Matt, and, you know, we talked last week about the commonality between the Spurs and the Patriots. There is a feeling that Greg Popovich and Bill Belichick, and sometimes I think both teams are kind of victims of their own success to some extent and high expectations, which obviously is a good thing, but that Bill Belichick and Greg Popovich can just take anyone. I mean, you look at what Belichick did with Julian Edelman. Guy was a third-string quarterback in college, blah, blah, blah. We know the story that goes on and on. And that these guys can just find whomever and just fill anything, any gap they have on a team. And it's not that easy. Julian Edelman, when he came in, wasn't Julian Edelman. It took a long time to develop him. And I think that that's kind of an underrated aspect of both the overrated aspect of the Spurs and the Patriots, is that no matter, there's a feeling that just you can plug anybody in to the system and that this guy's going to step up and he's going to be Julian Edelman or he's going to be Tim Duncan.
Yeah, not anyone's going to be Julian Edelman or Tim Duncan. Those guys are Tim Duncan's one of the greatest of all time and Julian Edelman's one of the best players at his position in the league. And that injury was exposed a little bit, I think, and also the defense. I mean,
yeah,
they had to figure out the defense. They just could not stop them in the second half. The Chiefs did whatever they wanted, as anyone who watched the game saw. So it's at the same time, you know, it's a process. I don't think Tom Brady or Bill Belichick cares about going 19-0. We talked about this last week. You know, they care about being healthy and playing the best football come playoffs, and this first loss will hopefully be a lot of fuel to kind of jumpstart that process going into week two. As you know, maybe guys, it's Super Bowl hangover, first game after the Super Bowl, all this 19-0 talk. You know, who knows if guys relaxed a little and started to believe the hype, became content, and you know, they got a wake-up call, for sure, in game one. So hopefully it resets everybody's mindset, and everybody's on way more edge and more intense coming into game two so they can get back to playing Patriots football we're used to seeing.
Yeah, that was the biggest takeaway for me was the urgency, and Brady touched upon that in his post-game comments. We'll hear those coming up in just a little bit. Is that they didn't appear, ready to play. They weren't engaged enough. They weren't forcing turnovers. They weren't finishing tackles. And these are all things that you come to expect from the Patriots. And for Brady, I mean, there's no question. I think that, again, this was very kind of glossed over, was the impact that Edelman was going to have. I mean, this is not something that you're just going to be able to change instantaneously. I mean, this is a guy, and Amendola went down in the game as well after being targeted a lot. You're just not going to be able to replace him because Brady likes high percentage passes. He likes the opportunity to gain yardage and not turn the ball over. He manages a game. That's the way the Patriots play. And you take away that option, and really, Barry did a really good job down the middle of taking away Gronkowski with just going one-on-one. So Gronk wasn't able to draw a double team. He was negated with one player, albeit a very good player. And though the high percentage passes weren't there. And as you mentioned, really the offense wasn't even a significant factor. I mean, the fact that the defense got lit and Stephen Gilmore had one of the worst debuts I've seen in sports. That was the problem for the Patriots. And, the Hightower injury, they're saying it might be just a week. They need him. They got to the quarterback a little bit. But overall, I mean, that's the area of concern for me. The defense, what they gave up, they pride themselves on being bend but not break. They broke a lot, and they didn't get any turnovers.
Yeah, there's not a lot of positives to take away from that game on either end of the football, especially defense. We've seen it in the past where maybe the Patriots' defense can keep them in a game. They force some turnovers so that they're in the game coming down the stretch, and then Brady can do what Brady does and make big plays and get a win. But that was just not the case, as you stated. That was a pretty big statement, though, one of the worst debuts I've ever seen in any professional sport. That's a big statement. But
that's what I'm here for. It's a hyperbole, man.
Can only go up from there, right?
This is hyperbole. His own teammates were kind of upset about the type of contract that he got. And he and Edelman got into it during training camp. Malcolm Butler wasn't too happy with the size contract he got. He had a lot to prove in that game. So that's all part of it. I mean, he had to
be mad at his agent, not him.
I understand that, but I'm not mad at him. I'm just stating why it was one of the worst debuts in sports I've seen, because there was a lot riding on it for him, and he wasn't even chasing his receiver. He was watching his receiver from about 30 yards back go to the end zone a couple times. So, yeah, I mean, yes, it was a blown route, and so he could only go up, but there was a lot expected of him, and, he hasn't, he had a tough game, and we'll see what happens from there. Switching gears now, as the Patriots look towards the New Orleans Saints. We know we've talked about this before. It's a compact NFL season. You got 16 games, and the Patriots, things don't get much easier for them taking on Drew Brees. Granted, the Saints are not as good a team as the Kansas City Chiefs, but Brees is a guy who's a better quarterback than Alex Smith, in my view. He may have not as good weapons as Alex Smith has, but this is going to be a really difficult game for the Patriots, and almost, I don't want to say a must-win, because you can win this division with a 9-7, and then nobody wants to play the Patriots in the postseason, or a 10-6. But you don't really want to start the year 0-2, which is somewhat obvious.
You're absolutely right. This is a big bounce-back game. We're going to learn a lot about this Patriots team, especially the defense, seeing how they learn and grow from their game one blunders. And then, like you said, coming in against another quarterback that's really going to test them in Drew Brees. So it should be exciting to see how they respond.
Yeah, and concluding here with Matt, who's got around, I mean, the big thing is who's going to step up? I mean, who are the guys who are going to step up? And that being said, you have to acknowledge the losses. I mean, losing Amendola, and we'll see what happens. He's having some concussion issues. Edelman is done for the year. You have to acknowledge that, and the Patriots are good at, you know, adapting and changing personnel. But, you know, it's not like flipping a switch. Whether it's the Spurs or the Patriots, a lot of the individuals are groomed because of who they are and the skill set they have, and then they become the individuals that they become through time. You know, Julian Edelman, like Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard. It doesn't just happen where these guys step in and then all of a sudden, you know, they're stars. You're not going to find somebody who's going to replace Julian Edelman right off the bat. And they'll have to, you know, adapt. And I look for more out of Cooks, and we'll see what he can do this week.
Yeah, like anything, it's a process. Any team, even a team that's used to playing with each other at almost every position, still has an adjustment period in the beginning of the year where you're trying to iron out your role, what your role is going to be on this team for the season to help them win. You have different guys who are X-factors and step up and take on bigger roles. Some guys might sit back and take a smaller role, you know, all for the good of the team, all part of their development or life cycle within their career. But when you throw new people in there, that you can't expect it to just happen at the snap of two fingers. It takes, like you said, it takes a little time. So got to be a little bit patient in that department. But at the same time, there's such a high standard of excellence and consistency that it's easy to become impatient and expect everything to just click right off the bat. But, you know, I suspect it will take some time. It's a process. You know, week two is going to be a huge test for the defense, seeing how they bounce back and respond. And that's kind of, to me, the most interesting storyline going in.
No question. Matt, as always, appreciate you joining us for the show. We'll catch up with you again next week.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show powered by Revision Energy. What can sunshine do for you? Check out Revision Energy. .com. When we return, we'll hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick and Patriots quarterback Tom Brady on the loss to the Chiefs, how the team is moving forward, and we'll check in with the Red Sox. Interviews with Mookie Betts and Carson Smith coming up in just a few moments here on The Life
Welcome
with
back
Matt
here
Bonner,
on The Life with Matt Bonner,
presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Concord Youth Hockey. Sign-ups are right now. Get your youngster involved in hockey, and the best time to do that is starting at the age of 4. Check out ConcordYouthHockey.org for more information. Patriots started out the year 0-1. A lot of fans talking about the fact that this team might go undefeated. 19-0 this season. That obviously won't happen with the loss in week one to the Kansas City Chiefs, 42-28. Defense was bad. Offense, you know, really scored some points, but not enough in this contest, and Brady's numbers weren't all that good. Let's hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
We didn't really do much of anything well enough tonight to deserve to win. We gave up 42 points, stopped on 4 short yardage plays. Got to coach better, got to practice better, got to play better.
Here's Brady.
I just think we need to, you know, have more urgency and, you know, go out there and perform a lot better. And that, you know, is a winning attitude and a championship attitude that you need to bring every day. And, you know, we had it handed to us on our own field.
So the Red Sox enter play this week. It looks like any hopes of having home field advantage for the division series and certainly for the American League Championship Series are out the window, as both the Cleveland Indians and the Houston Astros appear to be running away and hiding. Red Sox lead the Yankees by 3.5 games in the AL East, and that still is a concern. I really do think so for the Red Sox. Yankees are coming on strong. Red Sox do have a very favorable record down the stretch, so that should help them. Red Sox actually, at this point in time, just by percentage points, have a better record in 2017 than they did in 2016 at this point. So there's a lot of talk about the Red Sox season and not being all that good. Record-wise, they are actually slightly better than last year, but they trail both the Astros and the Indians by a significant number of games, 5 behind Houston, and they are 6 games behind Cleveland for home field in the playoffs. But the concern, winning the division, getting into the postseason. I talked with Red Sox right fielder Mookie Betts.
If you look at, you know, the record of this team this year as compared to last year, you guys are actually ahead of your pace. Does it feel like, you know, this team is kind of ascending and is kind of building upon last year? Is this kind of very different?
I think it's very different. I mean, it's a new year. Our dynamic is different. I think we just kind of show that we don't have those long slumps of games where mm-hmm. we're losing a whole lot of games. We kind of stay 500 or somewhere in there. And, you know, obviously, I think we've been winning. Obviously, been winning more than losing.
What do you look at as to, you know, why the team's record might be, you know, a little bit better this year as compared to last year? Has the pitching been better? Has the team, as you mentioned, gone through fewer, longer losing streaks and there's been more consistency?
I think just more consistency. There's some games that we've, you know, stole at the end of games and whatnot. So it's just a bunch of different things where we just kind of find ways to win games.
That seems to jump out how much this team has been better late in games this year, extra inning games, and that seems to be something that will bode well for, you know, the postseason, where you guys are grinding perhaps a little bit more and finding ways to score runs, where, you know, the production, home runs, and everything else may not be the same, but the team is having more winning type at bats.
Right, yeah, and that, you know, that's obviously how you win, so I think we know that. We understand that's our identity, so we just try and put it in action.
For you, one of the most amazing parts of watching you play is the fact that you impact the game in ways that are not necessarily traditional. At what point did you and Jackie, and because you kind of have a commonality in how you think about impacting the game, what point did you realize, okay, you know, when the ball is hit to center field, I can tag up in second and go to third, or, you know, taking the extra base? Was that something that happened early on, or did you start to identify that as being a way that you could impact the game in a tangible type way, you know, in the minor leagues or somewhere else?
You know, I didn't think about it a whole lot through the minors. Once you got to the big leagues, you just kind of realize how hard it is to score, how mm-hmm. important it is to, you know, add the extra 90 feet, get that extra 90 feet. So, you know, I just learned to try and do it any way possible. So it's something that I've kind of learned and instinctual too.
All right, that is Mookie Betts. Red Sox also may be bolstered by the return of Carson Smith. He's still working his way back, but has looked good, and he has just nasty from the right-hand side. A guy who I think could really help the Red Sox in the postseason, but he's still building back arm strength, trying to, you know, even get to a point where he can pitch back-to-back. But a good couple outings for him, starting with his return to the major leagues on Labor Day after being out for an extended period of time after Tommy John surgery.
Just talk about what it's like for you to get back on a major league mound after all the work you've put in. Is that one of the more rewarding moments, you know, of your career to be finally back?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been a long process. I think anybody that goes through Tommy John understands that it's a grind. You have ups and downs. You think you're going to be back sooner than you are, and then you hit a road bump, and you just got to grind through it. So I had to get out there last night. Results aside, I was just happy to be back out there.
Talk about what, you know, that grind is like, particularly on a pitcher, you know, mentally. And so we've talked to Christian through the process where he was going through Tommy John, wondering if he was going to be able to throw the same way he threw before. But for a pitcher, you know, having that much of a change go on with your shoulder, what's it like mentally at that time period where you're not necessarily able to get out there and throw?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have a lot of downtime. I mean, if you can't pick up a ball for the first, you know, four months or so, and you really can't do much for the first 2 months. So just getting your body back in shape is a part of the process as well. It's not just, you know, conditioning your arm to be able to pitch again. But after you've been throwing a baseball consistently for numerous years in a row in your life, to take a year and a half off seems like an eternity. So it's just a grind to get back into pitching shape and fortunate I'm there now.
Guys will talk too about the fact that there is a big difference between being in a major league clubhouse when you're not on the team, quote unquote, where you're not out there and pitching each day or playing each day, and when you are contributing to the team. How difficult is that as well, to want to be contributing and want to be a part of the team, and now finally being able to go out there and be a big part of this bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, I've been here throughout periods of my time this year, throughout my rehab, and I got to watch these guys play, but it's always more fun being in uniform, being out in the bullpen, knowing that you're going to, you know, be there ready to contribute whatever you can to help this team win. And, yeah, I'm just excited to be back and be a part of it.
Whether it's, you know, Brandon or Heath or Matt or whoever, everybody wants to be in the high leverage situations late in games. Do you see yourself, you know, being there now where you are ready for that type of a role, or are you just kind of taking it one out at a time and seeing where things land?
Yeah, I'm not trying to look too far ahead. I mean, I can be as confident as I want, but I still got to go out there and get outs day in, day out, and be able to recover as well. That's something that we really haven't tested to the normal extent of other players. So I haven't gone back-to-back yet. I know everybody here has gone back-to-back already, so that's another challenge I have to be able to overcome in the near future. And right now I'm just trying to take one day at a time.
And final thing, do you feel like you're back to, you know, where you are in terms of breaking pitches, the velocity on the fastball, or is there still some more that you'd like to see?
I think there's always more I like to see. I mean, I'm always trying to get better as a pitcher, but I've seen what I've done in previous years, and I don't think I'm quite back yet, but I do feel confident with what I have, and I'm just hoping it keeps getting better.
All right, that is Carson Smith right there. One of the stories this year has been Sam Travis. He didn't really have an impressive year at AAA, hasn't really made a significant impact at the major league level either. This after a couple really strong spring trainings and the feeling amongst the Red Sox organization that this is going to be a guy who's going to play a significant role for the team moving forward. So, and the potential existed for the Red Sox to hand over first base to Sam Travis with Mitch Moreland just on the one-year contract. I talked with the Red Sox top prospect who started yesterday's game and had a couple hits.
Just when you look at this season for you, what do you, you know, see overall kind of as we get towards down the stretch here of the season? Obviously, the opportunity still continues playing first base here on Sunday. What have you seen so far from you this year?
I mean, just I'm up here right now trying to contribute in any way I can. It was good this year, you know, getting back on my feet, coming off that injury. But, you know, still going to improve, still got to get to work every day and try and win games.
Has it been, you know, difficult to kind of be consistent because of the roles that you've had this year? Or is it something else that kind of stands out to you?
No, I mean, I don't really think much of, you know, playing. You know, I got to be ready at all times when I get called upon. I show up to the yard every day as if I'm in the starting lineup. Because you never know when you're going to get the call to go in. And that's how I approach it.
What does it mean to you that the organization still kind of has the feel that Sam Travis is our guy moving forward? We're going to give him, you know, the opportunities down the stretch here in meaningful games. We're going to put him in, and he's still a big part of this.
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot, you know, that you know, they're willing to put me out there, but at the same time, nothing's going to be given to me. I got to go out there and perform and help the team win. Nothing's going to be given to me.
What do you like about this team overall? It seems like no matter when guys come in, they're always kind of a part of things, no matter if they've been here for a couple days, they've been here for a long time. And is that, do you think, unique among baseball teams to have that kind of inclusiveness?
Yeah, you know, this team is one big unit. Everybody operates together. It's not about one guy. It's not about, you know, a group of guys. It's about everybody contributing as one. And, you know, everybody knows their role. Nobody's here complaining about playing time or whatever. We're just trying to win games. We all have one goal in mind. And that's the way it is.
And how do you see, you know, as a prospect who's, you know, trying to, again, as you mentioned before, trying to, you know, establish that consistency and put up the numbers that you want to put up? I mean, does it mean less to put up numbers when you're in this type of environment where you see guys who are just looking for the opportunity to contribute in significant ways, you know, in big spots?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you ask anybody in this locker room, I don't think they're going to care about their numbers at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. We make it where we're trying to go. And that's the World Series and beyond. You know, everybody's here every day trying to contribute, and, you know, the numbers will take care of itself.
And finally, what have you kind of, in self-reflection, learned about yourself during the course of this year, about who you are as an individual? Has anything kind of come up that is confronting you about, you know, how you have to do things moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, just got to stay within myself. You know, sometimes you get too anxious, trying to do too much, and, you know, you're not going to hit an 8-run home run and one at bat. You're not going to make up for the last at bat and your next at bat. You know, you just got to forget about it and keep going forward.
So you've kind of seen yourself, you know, pressing at times to try to do too much when the opportunities have presented themselves here at the major league level?
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
You know, there's just times when, you know, things aren't going well and you're going to go up there and try and do too much.
Right.
But you need to take a step back and control your emotions, and that's a big part of this game.
Sweet. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Sam Travis right there. On the Rays side of things, it's been a better year for them. They challenged for the division, were in the mix around the All-Star break, but have fallen off since then. They're a couple games under 500. The wild card is still an outside possibility for them. I talked with Kevin Kiermaier about that, but also about the quality of defense we're seeing in center field in the AL East. You have him, Kevin Pillar, and Jackie Bradley Jr., who are amongst the three best I've ever seen.
Ask you a little about Jackie Bradley Jr. and what you see, you know, when you watch him, because it's awesome in the AL East right now. You have three of the best center fielders I've ever seen. What do you like about him and the way he plays center field?
Oh, man, Jackie, he does it all. You know, he's not the fastest guy out there, but at the same time, he covers all the ground that he needs to, always takes really good routes, and it just seems like he's always in the right place at the right time. I hit a ball the other night. Did not think there was a chance of it being caught, and he catches it. I watch highlights all the time, and I feel like he's on there every week. And the thing about him that impresses me the most is his arm, though. I know that's, you know, there's, you think of a lot of good outfielders who are out there who, you know, cover ground. They can all the catches, but you know, guys with good arms separate themselves from others, because like I said, it's not everyone has it. I say, you know, we're probably going to run on more guys throughout baseball than you know, we're gonna test guys, and Jackie's not one to test. His accuracy, his arm strength is right there at the top in all baseball, and like I said, that's and he's great at playing balls on the wall too. And you know, having a great arm and doing those, you know, playing balls against the wall, I think that's what the best center fielders in the game do. And like I said, he does both of those well above average. So I hate when he does it to us, but at the same time, nothing but respect for what he does out there. I've seen it for numerous years now, and you know, it doesn't get old watching it to me, because I'm a center fielder. I know what it takes out there to be successful, and on certain plays I know how tough it is, and Jackie makes it look easy, and I'm a huge fan of him.
There have been guys in the past who have been great center fielders, but they have been able to make up for not getting great jumps with their speed. The thing that seems to make you three so great is that you get the jumps, you read the ball well, and you have the speed as well. Is the jump, though, the most important part? You had the ball on Saturday night that Mookie hit into the gap, and it looked like it was going to be the line drive, sure double. And you were able to get there, not with relative ease, but you were there because of the jump. Is that the biggest thing for all three of you guys?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, you know, allows you to not cover as much ground, I guess, you feel like you're in more of a rush whenever, you know, you get a break on something. So it's just one of those things that the better jump you get, the less ground you have to cover, and you know, it's such an advantage whenever you do read a ball straight off the bat. You know exactly where it's going to be hit. So I think all the best outfielders in the game do that more times than not, and you know, it's by making a catch, you know, by just making a catch or just missing it, and it all comes from the jump, to be honest. And you know, it takes that perfectly hit ball to you know, display and get recognition for the jumps you get. So there's a lot of things that come into play, but definitely that's one of the main components, because it all starts in the jump, and then your speed and instincts and route, everything else falls into play as well.
Jackie's mentioned the fact that he sometimes feels restricted by playing center field here, and he likes to play a little more open space.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way too, where you wish you could do a little bit more, but with the wall, there's obviously the intricacies, but you're kind of restricted in some of what you can do?
Yeah, definitely. You know, to right center, That's not a fact, because
right.
It's huge out
right.
there. You have all the ground you want out there. But when you are shading to left, you know, whether it's a lefty who hits the ball to left field or a righty who's a pull hitter, when you're shading over there, you know, the left fielder, you look over and it feels like they're 70, 80 feet away from you, which is never the case. And it's just one of those things. You don't have a whole lot of space, and it's – the only plays you're allowed to make are, I guess, if it's against the wall, and, you know, a shallow pop fly that ends up where you have to jump up like Benintendi did last night, or Jackie plays the carom off the, you know, he's going to get a lot of assists like that. Guys trying to stretch singles into doubles. Other than that, there's not a whole lot of ground in that outfield compared to other outfields throughout the game where you look around and you go, wow, like, this is so spacious. And I love those outfields. I love having space and being able to run down balls and do certain things like that. But definitely Fenway, left center and over does not allow you to cover as much ground as you would like for guys like me and Jackie who like to go get it.
Final thing, you know, for this team, do you feel like there's been a lot of growth in the fact that here you are competitive in September baseball? Obviously, it's where our teams want to be, but do you feel like, you know, you've seen the growth, particularly on the offensive side, where this team has the makings of being a division contending team moving forward?
As far as growth, it's just one of those things where I just I don't believe in moral victories.
Right.
Or, you know, we haven't the past 3 years, which I've been here, 2014, 15, 16, we haven't won. I haven't had a 500 record, so I'm not happy with that. And here we are, three games under 500, and you know, it's just one of those things where we could easily be. I know a lot of teams can say this. You know, you think about the games you gave away, you think about the games you won. There's no reason we should be 15 games above 500 right now, and that's very realistic. But like I said, every team can say that, but like I said, you can't say what if. It's either you either win, you lose, and we haven't won as much as we've wanted to, especially in close games. We've had a couple really bad stretches, a couple really good stretches, but you know, here we are trying to battle for a last wild card spot with the last 3 weeks of the season. You know, we're gonna give it our all, obviously, but it's just one of those things. As far as growth goes, you know, I can't sit here and try to make us sound good in that, because, you know, we're trying to win the division each and every year and go, and that's something, you know, that's not going to happen this year as far as the division goes. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we have to win more games, and we're never content with what we're doing. That's the competitive side. I know I'm speaking for everyone in here. Said we're still in the hunt, which is great, but at the same time, we should be, our record should be a lot better than what.
Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics, and this segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Dave D'Onofrio joins us right now from Boston.com. And Dave, if you look at the American League right now, it feels like the Astros, the Indians, and even the Yankees have passed the Red Sox in terms of how they're playing right now. I think the Red Sox could beat any of those teams in the postseason, but you know, in terms of the talent level and where the team is playing, the way the team is playing, I feel like all three of them are ahead of the Red Sox right now, but Red Sox could beat any of them if the opportunity presented itself.
Yeah, and let's remember where we were at in terms of you and I, in our opinions, when the Indians began the streak. It was sort of, I think you were favoring the Red Sox
a little better.
I was favoring the Indians, and we were talking about the chance for the Red Sox to secure home field advantage because the Indians were dealing with injuries. They had a tougher schedule, at least for that portion of the season on paper. And now here we are 18 games later, and the Indians are the top team in the American League, and they still don't have Andrew Miller back or Jason Kipnis. And you get those two guys back and remember what both of them did in the postseason a year ago, and that makes the Indians even scarier than they are having won 18 in a row. So that's a team that, add in their postseason experience, add in Edwin Encarnacion in his second half to that mix. And
Jose Ramirez has stepped things up. Jose Ramirez has stepped things up a lot for them this year. He's become a star, more so than last year. The Indians are in good shape. And it's not just, you know, the Indians getting better too. It's, you know, Chris Sale coming back to, you know, back to earth, if you will, a little bit. He's still pitching really well, and I wouldn't make a huge deal out of the you know, the games where he struggled, but the games have been against the Indians. And if the Red Sox are going to beat the Indians in a five-game series, Chris Sale's got to win at least one of those games, probably two of those games, and he's pitching against Corey Kluber. And, you know, the Indians' experience,
mixed with the fact that they're playing well right now, they're getting guys back. Yeah, I mean, I feel, you know, despite the fact that you shouldn't pay too much attention, and it's 18 game winning streak, it's now, they could be playing different at that time. It's about, you know, not how good you are as a team, but how you're playing as a team right then, the playoffs, as we've seen over and over again. But yeah, I mean, I think it'd be crazy if you're not, you know, even if you're on the Red Sox, you're seeing what's going on. You feel the separation. One of the things that's most amazing about the Red Sox, you look at their record now as compared to last year, and they're actually a little bit ahead of their pace from last year, which is crazy considering, you know, all the things that have happened to, you know, the Red Sox this year in kind of a negative fashion. You know, not getting the production out of Mookie and Xander and Hanley that was expected, not having David Ortiz. And, you know, the big question is, how have the Red Sox done? And I asked Mookie Betts about this yesterday, and he said, basically, as we've become a better team late in games, it's not, you know, how many runs we're scoring, it's when we're scoring, you know, the runs. And last year, we would score more runs, we'd hit more home runs. But this year, you know, we're scoring late in games and having, you know, and winning games that way. And I think that's a really good point, where this team has become better at, you know, grinding and winning in close games than we saw before.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And remember back to last year in the postseason, you know, they never really felt like they were in that series. And so they haven't had a chance, this group at least hasn't had a chance to prove itself in situations like that. So, you know, another theme that we've talked about a lot throughout this summer is, you know, what is this team going to be in October? We've never seen Betts or Bradley or even Bogarts do it in the postseason. We've never seen Sale and Price deliver at that time of year. So that's a question, and it's a really good indicator, I think, that this team does win these 19-inning games, and they have so many walk-offs. They do seem to have some toughness in that regard. I'm not sure they're the mentally toughest team, generally speaking, but with the game on the line, they're pretty good there. And in terms of their pace, you know, let's think of last year's Red Sox sort of in the context of this year's Indians, too, because it was right around this time where the Red Sox got really hot and put the division away. They obviously closed kind of losing some steam. You remember that game, they clinched the division at Yankee Stadium and actually lost on a walk-off grand slam. That was followed by losing 2 of 3, I believe, to the Blue Jays on the final weekend, and that cost them home field advantage for the division series. But it's just another reminder that, yes, there are only 3 weeks to go, but in those 3 weeks, momentum can come and go pretty quickly. And if the Indians fall back to earth here and sort of coast to the finish, everything they will have gained by this 18-game winning streak, aside from in the standings, will probably be lost by the time October actually gets rolling.
I feel, you know, that as I mentioned before, the Astros and the Indians are ahead of the Red Sox. I feel like the Yankees are too, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's how you play in those individual games. What are the matchups? Baseball is a game in which there is very, very little separation between teams, even bad teams and good teams. I mean, even if you're one of the greatest teams of all time, you know, you're going to lose 50 games in a year. If you're one of the worst teams of all time, you're going to win 50 games in a year. So, I mean, baseball is a very strange game in which there's a lot of variables that play out. And the Red Sox could very easily beat the Indians or the Astros or the Yankees. But, I mean, you do feel right now, as we sit 3 weeks out from the regular season, that those three teams are better than the Red Sox right now in terms of statistics and just kind of the overall feel and momentum of the team. I mean, the Red Sox, you wonder who are going to be those four guys that are going to start for the Red Sox in a series. You wonder, you know, how they're going to fill out their lineup. And you can say, oh, they have a lot of good options, and they can decide, you know, whether or not they're going to sit Bogarts or where they're going to play, slot in Eduardo Nunez. Is he going to play third base for Devers? But, I mean, you look at just the left side of the infield. Devers, he can hit, but he is, you know, not a very good defender right now. He makes a lot of mistakes. On throws, his footwork. There's a lot there. And the fact that we're having a conversation about sitting Xander Bogaerts, I mean, that's not good. Bogaerts is a really talented player who I think is hurt. But I mean, the left side of that infield, everyone's kind of been, feels like the situation's been shored up with Devers, and yeah, his bat has been significant, but he costs you a couple runs a week out in the field.
And that all plays into roster management and decisions that you're going to make as far as who you're going to keep on your 25-man roster, because you may need to think about keeping Devin Marrero for late-game defense when, in reality, in a lot of ways, that just takes a bat off your bench. If you're worried about Hanley against righties or Moreland against lefties, if you keep Marrero just for that 7th, 8th, 9th inning defense, you have less options there. I think yesterday it was revealing to me, at least, that it's a fairly big game. You'd already take a two from Tampa, but you're already missing Pedroia, and yet you go to Sam Travis in the lineup, sort of at the start of the stretch run here. He's a guy who obviously has some offensive potential, but had a pretty average to below average year at Triple-A.
Yeah.
Hasn't done a ton at the major league level, and yet he's a guy you're inserting in your lineup looking for a spark yesterday when you're already missing Pedroia. And to me, that was a wake-up call a little bit as far as the thinness of their bench, their depth. Nunez was out. They wanted to give him a couple days after he left Saturday's game. I think they'd love to give Bogaerts more time off, and I think they are considering sitting him. So it's an interesting situation because you do have these questions, and the answers seem to pop up at times and in spurts. But generally speaking, there's a lot of questions about which way this team could go, not only from the 25-man roster perspective, but also from the starting lineup. And it's something you'd like to have figured out by now, but I really doubt they're going to by the time October 1st rolls around.
Right. I mean, and that's one of the things that when you look at the Yankees, the Indians, and the Astros, perhaps it's because we're not as hyper-focused on them, but it doesn't feel like those teams have these questions. I mean, it doesn't feel like, and if they do have those questions, it's because they have a bunch of good solutions that they can, try to slot in. The Yankees right now, they have, maybe a question at first base and third base with Todd Frazier and Chase Headley and Greg Bird all in the mix. Frazier hasn't performed all that well for him. Headley has been hitting. But it seems like they have everything pretty much solidified, and with Castro and Holiday coming back, the offense has gotten better. They know who their four starters are going to be. They know how their bullpen is going to look. Granted, they would rather have Chapman in that ninth inning spot than Betances, but Betances is really good. And the Astros just have an influx of really talented players. Same thing with the Indians. Right now, this is not their optimal lineup, as you mentioned before, but they're performing, and that's that's really the big reason that I feel like those three teams are ahead of the Red Sox, because it feels like they have a lot more depth, they have more of a defined lineup. I mean, the Red Sox change their lineup pretty much every day to try to create more runs. I mean, they're running Christian Vasquez on a short fly ball. I thought it was a good play to make to try to get that second run. But, I mean, that's not something that another team would necessarily do. They're looking to find and scratch and claw any way they can to get runs.
And we've seen it cost them in terms of the number of outs they've made on the bases. And that's another issue in the postseason, is those outs are extremely valuable. I mean, just look at the way managers use pitchers in the postseason. If you get a guy who can get you four outs out of the bullpen, he's going to leave the mound to a standing ovation in October. And if the Red Sox are just giving teams outs, I appreciate the aggressiveness. I acknowledge that they don't hit a lot of home runs. They feel like they have to take these chances. But, and Vasquez was probably safe yesterday, too.
He was safe.
But the fact of the matter is you can't afford to give away anything in October. And the way the Red Sox are constructed now, and John Farrell talks about it all the time, how it's a team built around doubles and speed and aggressiveness, and that's all well and good, except that when you hit a ball over the wall, they can't throw you out.
So true. That's Dave D'Onofrio. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first.